give a lot of the credit to my older friend that taught me a lot of this, where having spent an enormous amount of time with him these last 6 years, what I've watched with so many of the deals he's done and shown me from the past is identifying these second or tertiary markets to the exploding municipality. And you can find these places where there is far less competition, far fewer competent players.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dan Habakost. Now, Dan's first foray into real estate was at the age of just 16 when he managed a portfolio for rental properties for his boss at the time. Now, Dan started his own investing journey at 21 when he purchased his first rental property while still at college. Now, from there, Dan has continued to buy more real estate rental properties while simultaneously building a land and development business, Front Range Land LLC. Now, at Front Range Land, Dan has bought, sold, and built on hundreds of pieces of land across the country, which is giving him a massive, unique insight into the land business in dozens of different markets and different ways. So I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible knowledge and experience with us at such a young age. But enough out of me. Let's get him out here. G'day, Dan. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Reid, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, my pleasure. And I was—I had the pleasure of being on your show a couple of weeks back, and we got connected here, and just really pumped to hear what you're doing. Like we ask all our guests that come on this show, can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
Yeah. When I was, I don't know, 5 or 6, I would do chores for my mother for $3 an hour. That was the very first time making money. I did that when I was young, and I'd go to my aunt's house and I would help trim her bushes and weed and landscape around that age too. And she'd pay me a little bit better. I think it was $4 or $5 an hour for her. But those were my very first means of making money. And then shortly after, I bought and sold stuff on eBay in middle school to fund a paintballing addiction. But yeah, those were the first few ways I made money.
Did you grow up with money in the household?
No. So I grew up in rural Ohio. I joke that I grew up in a cornfield in Ohio, but I really did grow up in a cornfield in Ohio. And my mom taught piano lessons part-time and my dad was a pastor. So sure. Money was not spoken of. I thought my friends that could go out to eat were wealthy. Turns out they're just middle class. Yes.
How did that shape you as a kid? You know, obviously you weren't poverty stricken, but mm-hmm. You know, money was an issue, right? It was an unspoken tension probably around the household table, right?
I would hear them talk about it. And so there was a big fear around money, which has held me back in business, where I conflated expenses with investing and probably would be a bit further along if I wasn't so afraid early on. I've gotten much better here, but if I wasn't so afraid at investing money and marketing employees, that sort of thing. So it affected me tremendously. But on a positive note, it created a prudence around money and an appreciation for money, where from day one, if I wanted to buy anything, I had to pay for it, you know, beyond the basics. Of course, again, we weren't poverty stricken, food, clothes, all that was handled. But I remember being at the store with my mother when I was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And there was a Sprite. And I said, "Mom, can I have that?" She goes, "Sure. Do you have money?" And I said, "No." She goes, "Well, then you can't have it." And so that was, in hindsight, great, because early on, I figured out how to make money. It was as a kid, a rule of nature. If I wanted anything, I had to go figure out how to make the money. And as an adult, that's paid off tremendously, because I started working early, which is what led to a bit of precociousness in college and experience managing people and then ultimately buying that first investment. But I'll pause there.
Yeah, no, look, I think the underlying theme that I talk and why I ask that question is really is a reflection of also my background. Like I was not poverty stricken, but you know, money was tension around the household table, dinner table, and the same sort of thing. It was the encouragement to go out and figure it out for yourself. And, you know, I remember being the legal age in Australia was, I think, 13 and a half. You could get your first job. And that was, as soon as I hit that age, I was like hitting the streets, trying to, you know, local newspaper shop, local cafe, just anything to get some dollars. as a kid to fund whatever I was doing at the time. But thank you for sharing that. So talk to us about the age of 16. You're managing some rental properties for a boss. Like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, so I started working for him on a farm at 15, and he had continually bought more and more pieces of farmland. Each of them came with a farmhouse, and he had tenants in all of them. And so once he got to know me, once he trusted me over the course of about a year and a half, at that point, he would go to Aruba for a good portion of the year, and I was responsible for the rental properties and the farm. And he was getting a great deal in hindsight. And so that was useful for a lot of reasons. I remember having to leave school early one day because a tenant had a problem. I was barely old enough to drive. But just that level of responsibility gave me a confidence as a kid. And also, and I was managing people during the selling season at the farm. And it managing that along with school was useful. But yeah, that was really it. He was gone and I was taking care of those rentals and the farm. And it was, in hindsight, very worthwhile. But more than anything, it taught me what sort of real estate I don't want to own, because he was good to me, but I definitely saw him be vindictive to other people, and he wasn't necessarily the best with his tenants. And so I saw that lead to some nasty relationships. And they were always nice to me, right? Because I was just the kid. They were also lower end rental properties. And so as an investor now, 12 years later, real estate that's younger than me and has units where I can place 700 or better credit score tenants. And so a lot of that came from the bad experience managing his rentals.
And talk about the first deal you got done at 21 when you're at college. Like most kids, including myself, I was too busy worrying about what bar I was going to go to on the weekend. But what was the, where was it? What was it? How did it look like? How did you get it financed?
Yep. So I did that job at the farm through high school. I did my own little landscaping business on the side with a buddy. Then in college, the first 2 years was able to do community college. You can get away with 2 years there, much cheaper. Wasn't that hard to pay for. The second 2 years, normal university. And so I had a full-time job while going to school because I just refused to have debt. I had a bunch of older cousins, two older siblings. They all took on tremendous debt in college. I'm not doing this. And so I worked full-time while going to school full-time those last 2 years. And it was awful. Honestly, I was not happy. I didn't appreciate what I was learning at that age, 19, 20, 21. But as I got towards my senior year, as I was approaching the last semester, I said, okay, this has sucked. I have had absolutely zero fun in college, but how do I take this experience and apply it as an adult to some sort of business so that I can be a bit ahead of the curve? Because I've been managing people for years. I was managing people at a landscaping company those last 2 years. Responsible for selling the work, maintaining the gross margins where they needed to be, hiring and firing, all that sort of thing. And so I read a bunch of different books, but like everybody else, it was when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it was like light bulb. Real estate it is, right? And so I was working full time. I was making, I think I had a $50,000 base and a commission. And so I made like 60 or 70 grand a year. And so I just went and bought an owner occupied duplex in Parma, Ohio, State Road. It was on State Road. I still own it. And that was my first deal. I was 21 and that's awesome. How it started.
That's awesome. And now let's fast forward to where you are today, what you've been building. I mentioned in the intro, you're in a building, a land and a development game. Now, my background's in structural engineering. I've worked for a big developer here in Los Angeles. I know the development world quite well. I would like to think so. So tell me the type of the developments you're doing. I'm also a passively invested in a land flipping fund, which is like buy the pizza, sell the slices, so to speak. So tell me what sort of thing you're involved in.
Yeah. So when I got out, I moved out to Colorado from Ohio, bought another house hack and quickly realized if I wanted to buy a lot of rental real estate, I needed to figure out how to make a lot of money and a job would not suffice. And so long story, but I met a guy at the real estate group here who had been doing land and development all over the country for the last 40 years. So I drive an hour south every weekend to Pueblo, Colorado, meet with him, work with him, and learn from him. And at the time, he was just doing simple infill new construction. And it was a really simple model. He had a contractor that was great, reliable, a simple floor plan. He'd have realtors go sell that floor plan on his lots. And there were pre-sales. Bank would finance the construction 100%. And then he'd split the profit with the GC at the end. And so that was my first intro into land and development. So very, very simple development.
And you're single family, right?
Yep. Yeah, but what was important about this too was it taught me the distinction between finished infill lots and raw land. And people who are not in land often conflate the two, where they just see a vacant piece of land, they saw raw land. They don't understand developed land versus undeveloped actual raw land. And so basically I started participating with him. I'd help him go source the lots, or I'd assign it to him, you know, go get the deal and assign it to him, help him put together these builds. And eventually I just took it and ran with it. And so it's all Front Range Land is all based around direct to seller marketing for lots now all over the country. And many of them are just simple buy and sell. Some of them are simple splits. You know, got one in Florida. We're just splitting it in half into two lots and kind of like you said, buy the pizza, sell the slices. And then I've continually done a couple small new construction projects at a time here in Colorado. I had one break ground yesterday, a duplex. I'm just going to keep a very nice big duplex in a nice area. It's all based around direct to seller marketing, buying the land at a discount, and then dispoing it in a variety of ways, depending on what makes sense. So very simple. I have not gone and done huge development projects, or, you know, taken a piece of raw land and turned it into 100 lots or anything like that. But that's certainly in the future.
Yeah, no, well, you got to get started. So, you know, huge amount of questions, because I know this space actually quite really, really well. You said all urban infill, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So how do you identify the municipality? Because where I'm actually building, I'm getting entitled right now, 5 acres in San Marcos, Texas. We're doing a 66 unit build for rent on it. And it's been a pain in my ass to get San Marcos City off. If they're listening, they talk about the red states and being so easy for development. But I tell you what, it's taking longer than what I've developed big $100 million projects here with my former developer in Los Angeles. And it got approved quicker than this. Like the old joke I always said to people is like, we ain't building the Eiffel Tower here, guys. It's just duplexes. Like, let's get going. So what do you do when you're looking around the country, right? How do you really hone in on the municipality and the zoning laws to make sure that you're not going to end up in a bunch of red tape?
Yeah. So all the new construction has been in Colorado in markets where I know very, very well. So south of me in Pueblo West, Colorado, and then there's a further market a little further down the Front Range, Colorado City. And these are very simple markets where the municipality, it's a metro district over both of them, and then the regional building department at the county level wanted more single family. If you want to go build an apartment, that's a different story. They, in Pueblo West, they will basically make it impossible. And so that's number one. Number two, their process is just so easy. And I'll have to give a lot of the credit to my older friend that taught me a lot of this, where having spent an enormous amount of time with him these last 6 years, what I've watched with so many of the deals he's done and shown me from the past is identifying these second or tertiary markets to the exploding municipality. And you can find these places where there is far less competition, far fewer competent players. And so Pueblo West, Colorado is an easy example of this. Like, you call a realtor, getting a call back is questionable. Or these people don't work on weekends. Like, and it's funny because it's irritating, but at the same time, juxtapose that with there's a ton of consumer demand. And so that has been a fantastic market to make money in. And the process to get approved to build is incredibly simple. I don't even need an architect to draw my plans. I need the engineer at the lumber company to do the trusses. I need an engineer to do a soil test and do the foundation. You don't even need an engineer or architect to do the actual house plans. I could go draw it myself. So I just hire a designer and pay him like $500. And so it costs me a few thousand dollars in a few weeks to get a residential permit down there. And so all that to say, Reed, part of it is just the person I learned from showed me markets like this, to be really transparent. But I have taken that concept and applied it in many of these markets in the Southeast where I'm just buying and selling or doing simple improvements on land and reselling. I look for those same areas. So another example, and it's super competitive now, so I don't mind saying it, but Brunswick County, North Carolina has been an awesome market. When I first went there, I was doing some due diligence to just get a feel for the market. And I call a few realtors and I mentioned a piece of land that we're looking at buying, you know, it's direct to seller, it's not listed. They go, oh no, that's not on the market. You can't buy that. Like, these people didn't even understand what direct to seller marketing is. Most of these attorneys down there, because it's an attorney state, not a title state, they don't even send wires. You have to mail checks. And so all of these are qualitative measures that made me say, hey, there's opportunity here. Because again, contrast the incompetence of a lot of the people there, the business people, with huge consumer demand. You got Myrtle Beach south of it, Wilmington north of it, very expensive. And here you have beautiful beachfront towns that are dirt cheap still. You know, when I went there at first and started doing business, you could buy a house for $200,000. So I ranted a little bit there, but I have for the new construction stuck to just really simple, easy markets.
Hey guys, I just want to take a second to share with you our latest multifamily investment opportunity, the Broadwater at Salado Creek, located in San Antonio, Texas, the market where we've got the most experience in. Now, rapid fire, here are the reasons why we love this deal. It's got fantastic investor returns. We are projecting around 20% annualized investor returns for those people who choose to invest in this deal. The second thing is that all the 176 units are in classic condition, which means we can come in, use our renovation program, and push rents even higher. Thirdly, is that multifamily pricing for properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in the commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap deals. Now, if you're interested, click in the description or reach out to me directly at reed@rsnpropertygroup.com. Now, let's get back into the episode. Yep. And I assume that all these infills are by right, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those people, do you want to explain what by right is?
Oh, yes. So you mentioned you're doing entitlement work on your 5-acre piece, right? In right. Texas, these pieces, what I want to do with it, so like the duplex I broke ground on yesterday on Harmony, it is already zoned accordingly for a duplex. So I don't have to do any work with the county of getting an approval beyond showing them the plans and, you know, making sure I'm not building something ridiculous or that doesn't fit the setbacks. And so by right, I can put a duplex on that piece of land, whereas what Reed's doing, it's a bit more complicated because he has to get approvals for the specific sort of project he wants to do.
And I'll say mine is still by right, and there's still been a pain in the ass.
Oh,
so
interesting. Oh, yeah,
I could actually put the density on that thing. I could put 120 units, and I'm only putting 66. So it's a whole other like flood issue and you know, the 200-year flood because of the nearby river. But I won't get into it. But what I'm trying to for the listeners is identifying the buy right space.
Yes.
You know, and actually you mentioned something that brought me way back in the day. You mentioned splitter blocks. That was, I picked up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2009. In 2010, I was still living in Australia and I went to the local real estate group, which was the only real estate group in the country, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what the big thing there was splitter blocks, going and getting, and I think they were doing a square meterage, but you couldn't go below 400 square meters in a single lot for urban infill, but going and buying a 1,200 square meter lot and then splitting it into three and then selling those and, you know, doing a quick a little curb cut, they were like, that's the sort of the starter, you know, the starter kit when you're getting involved in real estate investing. And sounds so, it's funny that you're doing that today. It's still a thing. And, you know, surprising, guys, if you're listening out there, all the real estate tricks and investments and strategies have been a thing since the dawn of time, and they'll continue to be a thing, you know, well into the future. You know, there's nothing saying that there's one thing's too hot or one thing's not hot enough. You know, I'm discovering the next big thing. It's don't need to go reinvent the wheel. Yeah. Just understand what wheel and where to do it. And, you know, what Dan was saying is like, find those tertiary and secondary markets where it's booming, but they want stuff to come there. But there's a little bit in, you know, people are inept and you can come in with, you know, two brain cells to rub together and be like, look, I want to help you. Let's help us help you. So love it. So talk to me about, we mentioned the green room. You're sort of now delving into this financing world. Mm-hmm. What was the issue that you saw when you were doing your projects that you're trying to solve for today?
Sure. So if you think about every real estate asset, whether it's the house I'm sitting in, the apartments you're working on building, commercial office, industrial, there's financing available for everything at this point. And I almost everything, right? It's harder to get certain assets financed, but overall, it's not that hard to find a lender who will finance pretty much any sort of real estate asset except land. Where do you find just a loan for the land itself? Even if you're buying it at 50 cents on the dollar, that's really hard to find. Sure, there's some construction loans that are for the land and the construction, and you have to do the construction, right, for just the homeowner that wants to go build their own house. But for all the people just buying and selling land or doing these simple splits, like you mentioned, you are invested in a fund for this because there aren't banks that'll finance it. Or my contractor that's building that duplex I just referenced, she called me the other day. She has a project similar to what you're talking about where she's getting it entitled and it looks like she's got all the approvals from the county. She just needs now the funds to close on the land, because she spent a huge amount of money to get that entitlement work done, to then go do the physical improvements, at which point she can get that permanent loan that will also allow her to build. And she said to me, Dan, I build houses. That's where I make money. I don't need the upside on the improved value of the land. I'll give the funder everything of the improved value of the land. I just need the debt. And it's hard for her to get. And this is a reputable builder. And so the point is, in most scenarios with land, there is not readily available capital. And so I had experienced this in my business, just doing what I do. All my friends I met in the space did. And then talking to builders, talking to anyone in the space, it was the same thing over and over again. And so I already was working on raising money for my own business. And so starting Ground Up Partners with Mason, who co-hosts the show, our show that you came on, is really just us solving our own problem, but then at the same time, solving many of our friends' problems and making money doing it.
Yeah, no, I bloody love it. I think it's identifying, you think that there's the solve is out there, right? Like the layman will be like, oh, there's going to be a bank that does that. But when you start scratching the surface, it's funny how shallow it is and how it's not readily available. But tell the listeners, I know the answer to this question, but how are you financing that? And are you financing that long-term closing to make sure you're not having to take on the dirt and close at the same time with your permits in hand?
So how am I financing
the 5 acres we got in St. Marcus, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to sell a carry finance on that for 12 months to then go to the city and like spend our own dollars and then mm-hmm. do a simultaneous close when we have initial approvals and we mm-hmm. can show that to investors and we can go raise money. Now, we're on a slightly larger scale.
Yeah.
But you could do the same thing, not close on the land, go get your permits and be like, all right, now I'm going to close on the land because I've got the permit in hand. It's sort of like it's not yours yet, but you do like a seller carry for a period of time or a long escrow. So it de-risks your out-of-pocket expense should you not get a permit from it.
Sure. So with all the new construction I'm doing, it's simple infill and there's no concern of that. Like you said, use by right, whether it's been single family for years, just shifted to the duplexes. And so I just buy the land.
Okay. So you're not even trying to get cute with that. You could get cute, right? You could probably do more if you wanted. Yep. Like in a fund model, you could be like, let's go type these five spots, mm-hmm. go submit in one package and obviously it's got to all line up. But anyway, just thoughts, because I know that a lot of, at least on my side, learning from the developer, like the big developers mm-hmm. do not, when they're going to go and put a 200 unit property on, mm-hmm. they are going to submit an LOI and it's contingent upon permits.
Yep.
They don't get the permits, they aren't closing on the land, and it sort of puts the risk back on the owner. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, these owners of these highly valuable pieces of dirt in urban infills with a lot of density, they don't know how to go and approach a city. They're not developers. They don't know how mm-hmm. to go and title stuff. So they're like, okay, well, look, this developer's coming along and saying, hey, I'll give you the money that you want, but it's got to be a long closing because I've got to go spend the next 6-12 months doing drawings with architects, mm-hmm. Meeting with the city. And before I can say, look, I've now de-risked the entire thing. But in your scenario, mm-hmm. and I want to ask, in that scenario where that lady was like, I don't have the financing, how much was the step up in basis on that land? So for example, the land might cost you $500,000 mm-hmm. pre-permit. Is it worth $600,000 or $700,000 post-permit?
Oh gosh, I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but it was substantial. It was like a 30-ish% increase, say. So it was quite a bit. And I got to piggyback on your point. So I sold a lot to D.R. Horton recently in Florida. And mm-hmm. exactly what you said, even though it was a simple infill lot, they didn't want to close until they had or are about to have the permit in hand. So they gave me full ask, no questions asked. And I was talking to the Southwest Florida land acquisition guy, and they will pay huge returns to investors who will put up money to float the debt or help on the acquisition of lots while they go and get it entitled. And this is a whole nother opportunity. Mentioning my older buddy again, he showed me example after example where you go and you find that end developer, you find the piece of land that they want, and you get it to the point that they will buy it at, whether that's shovel ready with pad sites created on each lot, or some of the smaller builders might pick it up if you get the paper plat done and recorded and they go put in the physical infrastructure. That's a huge opportunity with land as well. Just going to that, it's basically a pre-sale, right? Going to that end builder, figuring out what stage the land needs to be at for them to buy it. And then getting it to that stage, and you can do this very profitably because builders build. That's how they like to make their money. And so they'll buy land at retail value if it's ready for them the way they want it.
It's interesting you say that. So with this 66 unit we're building in San Marcos, we've raised all the money. We can go do the horizontals ourselves. The brokers are telling us that exact same thing right now. I've got experience, but I don't like show me the money, guys. Like I'll go pull the trigger on doing the horizontals. But like, where are the, there's so many people will buy it off you. If you just do the horizontals, you know, they'll be there. And it's like, all right, well, you know, because on our side, we've got to also weigh up the risk of, if I'm going to go break ground, I don't want to stop. I've got to then go and engage and build a bank on the verticals, right? I can finance the horizontals by self out of cash. But then on the verticals, I need the bank to be involved. So they can't come in later down the track. They've got to like, hey guys, we're going to go break ground on these horizontals right now. I may sell out of it in the next 6 months, but in the case where I don't find a buyer, I need you there to turn on the spigot to let's go vertical. And you know, me and my business partner were literally just talking about this the other day, like that risk reward of, and we just sent out an investor email telling investors, hey, we could sell this, pre-vertical, but we've got to be ready and strapped in if it doesn't come to fruition. So it's smart, but it's also, the fine knife edge that you've got to walk down to say, well, I can't just think I'm going to get out of this scot-free and sell it off. Because how many times have you seen those lots where they start, the foundations are in, and then they're stopped?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have it all lined up, you know? Yep. So, you know, you don't want to be that guy.
No, I have watched that happen. And that, yeah, you got to be very careful and well-capitalized and have multiple contingency plans for any sort of development.
Yep. Well, mate, look, we're coming to the end of the show. What's the plan, you know, with the funding and the, you know, so that sort of short gap funding space? Are you trying to raise funds right now? Are you doing a small fund to funds? Or what are you trying to do to get the money on the street?
Yep. So we've been doing this now for about 6 months where people submit these short-term land deals. We bring the capital. We're not a lender. We're a capital partner. So we partner on it together. And it has gone unbelievably well. In fact, I cannot believe how many deals we've had sent to us with almost no marketing. And so that's what we wanted. We wanted the lowest risk, lowest capital outlay to go and prove the concept to make sure we're not missing something. And we have gotten that. So yes, we have attorneys out of Denver that are getting everything together for us now, should be ready to go with the fund next month. So we're very excited about that because, again, the deals are just endless and the spreads are outrageous. And people's expectation for capital and what they have to pay on land is outrageous relative to any other asset that I've seen. So we're excited.
Well, babe, if you need any funders, let us know because we've got equity coming out of you know, if you've got too many deals you can't fund, we'd love to chat, but we can chat about that offline. Well, look, mate, at the end of every show, we love to dive into the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Let's do it.
Mate, question number one is, what's the daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
It's weekly, but there's an accountability sheet that actually Mason and I visit every Monday with the clear lead measures I need to execute every week to hit the long-term goals. And so just making sure I never miss those lead measures, I would say is the most important thing there.
Question number two is, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
My older friend that taught me the development business by far.
Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? Now, when I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a journal or a phone, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
Man, it's simple, but I've used PropStream for 6 years nonstop.
Okay.
Yeah.
PropStream. What do you like about PropStream?
It's so cheap for the amount of data you can pull. And honestly, just when you said tool, that's the one. I've switched CRMs. I've switched a lot of different tools, dialers, that sort of thing. I've used PropStream for 6 years and had no issue. So I know it's not perfect, but it's been great given the cost and the amount of data you can pull.
Awesome. Question number four is, in one sentence, what has been the biggest failure in your career? And what did you learn from that failure?
Letting, back to the beginning of our conversation, fear around money hold me back.
Yeah, it's look, we all struggle with it. You know, you're a function of your upbringing, and it's very hard to undo 20 years or 15 years of upbringing overnight. So, mate, last question, where can people reach you to continue the conversation that will be in your sphere? Where do they go?
DanHabercost.com or Dan Habercost on the socials. And if you have a land deal you want to submit, gupland.com, which is gupland.com.
gupland.com. Well, mate, look, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of the day. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think your ability to, you know, I think your upbringing has a lot to do with how you got to go out and solve problems, right? That solving problems as a young age gets a really good callus on the old fingers to help you be a good business person in the future, right? Not saying you're going to be flawless, but it helps you understand the problems, break it down, go out and then execute. I really love what you're doing in the land entitlement and development space, identifying niches that, again, as an outsider, I would also think like, oh, there'd be heaps of people out there funding these land deals. And actually there's not. And so the lesson for me is like, and for hopefully everyone listening, is that there's always going to be opportunities no matter where you look. You just got to understand where to look. And so just really love it. And I love that you've been able to scale it across the country and you're doing it with, you know, with such humility and just, you know, you seem like a really awesome dude. So to leave anything out there in that little summary?
No, I think that was great. This was fun. Really good questions. Thanks for having me.
Mate, my pleasure. Look, enjoy the rest of your week. If you have any questions for me, let's catch up soon and we'll enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, man.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible insights into Dan's, you know, past and present about what he's doing in his land flipping business and entitlements. If you do want to check any of the stuff out, he mentioned gupland.com and Dan Haberkost on all the socials. That's Haberkost. Now, I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ. All the show notes from today will be up on our website at reedgoosens.com. And the easiest way to give back to this show is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes or share with your friend. Spread the love. We'd love to hear other people listen to the show and give us feedback. We're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.